You know that part in hospital dramas where the patient flatlines? The heart monitor wails and you watch as the doctors panic and rush to the bedside. Of course, that's real. That happens in hospitals all the time. But how do doctors actually know what's going on? Well, it comes down to a rapid response system, and Australia has been a leader in refining them since the late 90s. But they aren't perfect. Producer Sam King spoke with John Riari Thomas, a PhD candidate at the University of Technology Sydney, Faculty of Health.
Rapid response systems were developed primarily to be able to pick up deteriorating patients early, with the overall goal of preventing adverse clinical events such as cardiac arrests and unplanned admissions back to ICU from patients that were already on the ward. So these were the patients that were actually already in hospital on a ward, but going unnoticed as they deteriorated.
Okay, so how does it work? Is there a main sort of, database that monitors all the different machines hooked up to each patient? Or
there are those kinds of systems around. Yeah. Unfortunately, they're expensive.
Right, okay.
So most hospitals don't have them. So they rely basically on the observations of nurses mainly, because they spend the most time with the patients, but also medical staff and allied health staff as well, being able to detect minor changes in the patient's clinical status, especially through, we use a lot of vital signs charts to be able to do that as well. So changes in blood pressures, heart rates, oxygen saturations, urine outputs, we put all those things together.
Can you walk me through what happens when things go wrong, like step by step?
With the patient or
yeah,
with the system?
The patient. Well, we'll start with the patient.
Sure. Hospitals, the population in hospitals has changed quite dramatically over the last 20 to 30 years, and the patients that we used to see in our intensive care units and coronary care units are now sitting on the general wards. The more well patients are dealt with just with day surgeries, and they're also treated in the community. So the acuity of the patients or the sickness of the patients in our hospitals is a lot higher than what it has ever been before. When you couple that with skill mix of the clinicians looking after the patients, as well as resourcing and not having enough doctors and nurses, they're all kind of situations that lead to undetected deterioration of the patient. So it's not always dramatic, and sometimes it's over a period of between 8 and 72 hours. So it's not something that you could pick up straight away, and unless you're monitoring the trends in those vital signs, you may actually miss it, which is what's been happening over the last probably 10 to 15 years. And it's globally, it's not just in Australia.
So what are the weakest links in the system?
The weakest links are obviously not escalating or not picking them up. And if you do record those vital signs into those zones and not escalating appropriately to the right level, still not realising that the patient is deteriorating and putting everything together. And that's not always the clinician's skills either. It's sometimes a resourcing issue. Hospitals are still run as if they're 9-to-5 positions where most of the doctors, most of the support nurses are around during that time. So staffing gets cut in the afternoon shifts, it gets cut at night time and on weekends, which means that these deteriorating patients are still deteriorating with far less staff to be able to identify.
So what do you propose to do about that?
Unless we get a lot of money and resources, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
That's partly the reason we have these rapid response systems, to aid in being able to help detect these patients.
So how much of a change is enough to know that the patient is starting to deteriorate?
Well, that's kind of a problem, because as you know, every single patient is different. So for patients that have, for example, they may have severe heart failure, so they're always going to have low blood pressures, so they're always going to trigger, every time you do a set of observations, they're going to trigger the rapid response.
Okay.
So it's very difficult, and each patient needs to be able to be assessed on their own individual basis. But there are general parameters, obviously, that we start off with. They came to those through research. So there was a lot of studies done, particularly in the 1990s and early 2000s in Australia.
So do you ever update the parameters based on specific patients?
Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's up to, as I said, when we do the assessment of each patient, it's up to the medical teams to have a look and to see whether they need to make the activation criteria more sensitive or less sensitive for that patient.
Okay. So I'm curious, from the nurse's point of view, how do these systems alert them that a patient's going downhill?
In New South Wales, we have colour-coded observation charts,
okay,
so vital signs charts. There's a yellow zone, which are more sensitive criteria, which we define as early warning signs of deterioration. And then we have our red zone, which is our rapid response zone, and they're more advanced and later signs of deterioration. So usually those two things will cause different response levels from different types of clinicians.
Okay. Have you seen a deterioration of a patient firsthand?
I've seen a lot of deterioration in patients.
What happens?
Usually, as I said, it's either they haven't been identified in the beginning. It depends what the deterioration is for. But what will happen is if the rapid response system kicks in the way it's meant to, the nurses will realise that they've hit a red zone. They will initiate the rapid response. And then depending on the hospital, it will depend on what kind of response that patient gets. Some hospitals use a senior doctor, like a registrar, to come to the patient within 30 minutes. Other hospitals use an intensive care-based medical emergency team, which goes to the patient straight away.
Okay.
So, yeah, once again, it depends on the model and the resourcing of that hospital.
Could you tell me about a specific case? Let's say the worst one you've ever seen, if you're okay to talk about it.
Well, I can talk about myself if you want.
Well, if you'd be okay to, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, I can give you a personal example.
Okay.
About 4 years ago now, I was involved in a fight where I was attacked. I lost a sight in my right eye. I was sent to a hospital. And clinicians were obviously quite concerned around the eye trauma, but weren't putting everything else together about what was happening physiologically. It was 24 hours before I received the surgery to reconstruct my eye. But in the meantime, I was actually sent down another floor, escorted by a nurse, but then left outside the clinic, the eye clinic. During that time, I was definitely going into shock. I passed out a few times. I kind of remembered nurses saying, "Who is this patient? What's he doing?" Oh, and somebody said, "Oh, he's waiting for the clinic." And I remember having difficulty even trying to stand to go into the clinic while the doctor looked at my eye, and I was quite shaky. But still, the registrars were so focused on the trauma, they weren't actually looking at what else was happening. And I guess this happens a lot, particularly there's also the other side of the coin where we do need to activate these systems on every single person. So they're quite rigid in that, which means that we get a lot of false positive calls, or what we call false positive calls, where patients do actually enter the red zone, but they're not deteriorating. So a lot of the times, after you repeatedly use that over and over and it occurs all the time, people start to get a little bit complacent, and there's a little bit of cried wolf in there as well.
Okay.
So clinicians sometimes maybe don't pay the attention that they should to these patients, primarily because we get so many of these calls because the system is so rigid.
Mm.
A lot of these systems are imposed as well. You know, they're just given to the hospitals, enforced by policies, but a lot of times the resourcing is not there to back them up and make them work effectively.
Is your personal experience, is that what sort of set you on track to do this research?
No, I was already doing my job and that research at the time, but it just made me more aware of
what actually happens. Knowing what's going on. And, you know.
At the time, I was too sick to even put it together. It was only later on when I came out of there and went, you know what? I was actually quite sick.
Yeah.
And it was.
I'm sure
once
that kind
again,
of
not picked up.
Yeah, galvanized your sort of, I guess, resolve to work on making these systems better, right?
Yep, correct.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, how do you think that the march of technological progress will change the way we monitor patients? I imagine, for example, AI might come into it in the future. Do you see that happening?
There's definitely a lot of technology out there. There are systems where vital signs or observations are all recorded electronically. They're stored in a database, and they're automatically, when they realise that a patient's entered a specific zone, it automatically sends off and activates a rapid response system.
Okay.
So it bypasses the human factors. The bad thing about that is that a lot of the times it takes away the human assessment of the patient. So being able to see the patient and going, well, they have hit this criteria, but they're not deteriorating. It's okay for that patient to be in that situation and have that blood pressure and have their heart rate as part of their diagnosis. So I guess the bad thing about those systems is it doesn't take any human factors into relation. But the good side of that is it blocks out the middlemen, which are the clinicians, and it activates it. So regardless of the resourcing or the skill levels of those clinicians, it will still be activated. So that's the positive side of those kind of things. But they are expensive. Everything in hospitals is about budget these days. So they probably will come in eventually as there's more and more and they become cheaper and more readily available.
Hmm. What would you like to see happen in the next few years? More of these systems?
I would like to see two major things I think are wrong with our systems at the moment. One is inadequately trained clinicians specifically for rapid response. So quite a lot of the times they're just given that job. And it's a very difficult job. It's about going in and sometimes taking control of another team or another doctor's patient and rechanging and rewriting their medical plans. So from a kind of cultural and professional respect perspective, that's very difficult for some of them to be able to do that. And also there's the consequence of if they have changed the criteria on somebody else's patient and that patient if something happens to them, then therefore they're responsible, and you know it wasn't really their patient to be able to do that. So those kind of things, I'd like to see a lot more education around being able to communicate better with the other medical teams and the other medical officers, being able to take more of a management and control kind of approach to be able to do that better. Also, not just personnel resources, but also equipment resources as well. I think we're still thinking in the past, and before these rapid response systems were developed, we used to have what we call cardiac arrest teams. So we would wait until the patient actually had a cardio or a respiratory arrest before we sent out ICU to try and resuscitate them.
Right, being reactive instead of proactive.
That's right. So the whole focus of these is to get in early, but we're still resourcing and putting a lot of money into training doctors and nurses and allied health on basic life support and advanced cardio respiratory life support. And we're putting a lot of money into equipment for resuscitation. But in actual fact, we should be putting all these resources into the rapid response systems in able to prevent these things happening in the first place. So I'd like to see a big shift in the way that we actually resource our hospitals and our rapid response systems.
John Riari-Thomas, a PhD student at UTS who's working to improve response times during hospital emergencies.